appreciate the invitation to come and speak to this group. And I'll take the time. I know that I stand between you and a break, so I'll be efficient and make sure that we get done on time. But I do want to take the time to acknowledge my co-authors with this work. I work with Dale Grotolution, who's from here in Gehring, Tim Knott, who's a practitioner in Arthur County, Nebraska, Steve Ensley. Steve was with the university, as well as Dale. Dale is now at Pfizer, and Steve Ensley works for Bayer Corporation. And I'll figure out how to... All right, so I'm going to talk to you today, this morning, about calf scours. I know that in this group you're probably familiar with this problem, not because you've ever had scouring calves on your own place, but you've probably been to the neighbors and seen some of their scouring calves. So you know that there are some important losses that are associated with calf scours, the first being death loss. Calf scours, neonatal calf diarrhea, is the leading cause of death for calves from birth to weaning. There's, of those calves that survive, significant performance losses. We have treatment costs. The medication to treat scours is expensive. More important than that probably is the hours of labor that it takes to address the problem. Finally, because I only get invited out to ranches when there is a problem, I get to see visit with people when they're dealing with these problems firsthand. And there's a lot of frustration. I sense a lot of frustration among ranchers when they're dealing with scouring calves. The day-to-day toll on their lives, the risk for injury. Sometimes when you're pulling those calves away from that mother cow to treat, there's a little bit of an opportunity for injury. So all in all, we believe that calf scours is a bad thing. A lot of emphasis is placed on the therapy of calf scours. Scouring calves lose a lot of fluids. With those fluids, there's lots of electrolyte losses, notably potassium, and the loss of bicarbonate, which is important for the acid-base balance of the animal. So in our aims at therapy, what we're trying to do is replace those fluids, get those electrolytes back in balance, and take care of that acid-base imbalance. There are some calves that require antibiotic therapy, and that's because of the damage in the intestines. Bacteria have gotten into the bloodstream, and so we've got a blood poisoning, septicemia. Those calves require antibiotic therapy. For the most part, calves do not require antibiotics for the therapy of scours. In fact, sometimes we set up conditions because of the use of antibiotics. We wipe out good bacteria, normal flora in the gut, and allow other pathogens to set up housekeeping because we've just cleaned the slate from those other competing bacteria. But I'm not here to talk to you today about therapy of scouring calves. I believe that of course, when you're faced with scouring calves, that's where you've got to put your emphasis. I would like to have you think about what you might be able to do in your system, your ranch system, that would prevent calf scours from being a problem in the first place. Now, this is not a new idea. It certainly didn't originate with me. The early 1930s was kind of an era of when we started to first talk about preventing diseases. We understood the infectious disease theory. We knew that germs cause disease, and we were starting to recognize that there might be ways that we could manage our livestock systems to prevent that transmission. About that time, Linus Van Ness, who was the chair of the department where I come from, veterinary science at the University of Nebraska, wrote a book called Animal Hygiene. And this was really a landmark text, very important for its time. In his introduction, he commented that the faith in cures and the practice of dealing with disease problems only after they have arisen is antagonistic to disease prevention. So what he was saying is, we would much rather pull out a syringe and a bottle and deal with the problems after they exist than try to think through how we might prevent the problems in the first place. And I guess I sense his frustration there. So we've evolved into an industry that relies on management in a bottle. In fact, the paradigm of the veterinary profession is exactly that. Somebody who is able to come out and provide that, whatever that magic bottle, that dose of elixir is. And there are very good, very important pharmaceuticals and biologics out there. We're lucky that we have them and that they're, you know, we're able to use them. But we still have scouring calves, and so I would like you to think that maybe there are some other approaches. So I will not be selling any products in the parking lot after the presentation. What I'm going to do is talk to you more about a population approach to preventing calf scours. We're going to talk about three different areas that are important in that concept. First being the infectious agent. The second being how the host animal, that calf, is going to respond to fight that infectious agent. And finally, remember that this all happens within some kind of environmental context that you all put those cattle in. So let's talk about the agent factors first. The agents that we deal with that cause diarrhea in baby calves are, there are several bacteria. E. coli and Salmonella are the principal ones. Lots of different viruses, and the most famous of those are rotavirus and coronavirus. Protozoal infections, Cryptosporidia, very important calf scour pathogen. And sometimes we'll see fungal infections. And those fungal infections in the intestinal tract usually result, that's not the principal infection. They come about after you've used antibiotics, wiped the gut flora clean, and allowed those funguses to overgrow in the gut. All right, so the big three pathogens for calf scour are the rotavirus, coronavirus, and Cryptosporidia. And they are present on essentially every farm. So you may not be seeing calf scour problems on your operation, but I'll gamble with you that I could come out and start testing calves, and I could probably isolate these pathogens from your calves. E. coli and Salmonella don't necessarily exist, at least the enteropathogenic E. coli or Salmonella don't necessarily exist on every operation. All right, so I'm going to introduce a few concepts that we have to go through. Bear with me on this, because when we're through with this, you'll know as much as most fourth-year veterinary students about infectious disease control. So the first concept is that the diarrhea-causing organisms that are widespread in cattle populations. So whether you're a herd that's currently experiencing calf scours or not, you probably have those pathogens available waiting for the opportunity to cause disease. Now, let's consider the host and the environment factors together. So the host immunity, as well as what in the environment allows the exposure of that host to those pathogens. And there's this general concept, and you've probably seen graphs like this before, that if the animal has sufficient levels of immunity and exposure levels are sufficiently low, there's no disease problems. All right. And as far as immunity goes, the most important factor for immunity is that calf receives adequate colostrum in the first 24 hours of birth. Okay, so that colostrum is rich in antibodies that bathe the gut. They're absorbed into the bloodstream in that first 24 hours. And then over the course of time, they're resecreted back into the gut. So they provide some protection to the gut over a period of time. But eventually, those antibodies disappear. So over the course of time, the protection that a calf has received from colostral antibodies begins to wane. Now, fortunately, at the same time, that calf is born with the ability to mount an immune response. And so as it's exposed to pathogens, it begins to activate its own immune system and produce its own antibodies and other cellular elements to fight infections. Problem is, if you look at that overall level of protection for that calf, there's some point in time when there's just this window of vulnerability where the passive protection is waning, active maternal antibodies haven't quite reached their steam yet, so that calf is susceptible to disease. And so if we have an adequate level of exposure to these pathogens, we're going to observe scours. And that's, in fact, actually what we see This is actual ranch data so that you can look at when the occurrence of calf scours tends to fall. 1 week to 2 weeks of age. Here's that data. Frequency of calf deaths by the age of the calf. So calves that are 1 or 2 weeks of age are at their highest risk for developing scours, dying from scours. If they haven't received an adequate dose to cause disease, that's also the age when they're going to shed the scour agents anyways. So they've had their exposure. They're most likely to shed these pathogens, disease or not disease, at about 1 to 2 weeks of age. This is going to be important later on. All right, so we've got this concept that there's this waning immunity level that causes this age-specific time period when we see scours in calves. That's an immunity factor, but also the exposure level is important. So if the exposure level is low enough, we still don't expect to see calves get sick or die from scours. But if that exposure level is higher or higher, we're more likely to see those scours events. All right. So the other factor that we have some control over is what that level of exposure is. Okay, third and final concept that I need to introduce. That is that the level of pathogen exposure is a function of time. That'll be obvious in a minute. It's also a function of the density of the animal. So the number of animals per square foot, I guess, obviously increases the level of pathogens in the environment, as well as this multiplier effect. Now, first of all, let's consider this animal density issue. So when in the course of a range calving system, a range cow system, do we have the most intense concentration of animals? And I would argue for most of you, that's in that calving lot. The most number of animals per acre. Now, the multiplier effect is the idea that, you know, these pathogens carry over from 1 year to the next, not in the soil like is often believed, but they carry over in the cow herd. So this cow herd is going to maintain these pathogens from 1 year to the next. They're going to shed these coronaviruses, rotaviruses, etc., at very low levels because they're mostly immune to them. So they'll shed them at very low levels and expose the calves as they're born. Calves, as they're born, serve as the multipliers. So they get that little dose from the cows, and they multiply it in their intestinal tract, and they pass it out. The next calf that's born gets a little bit larger dose, multiplies it, passes it out until the pathogens grow to large levels. So let's illustrate this multiplier effect. Researchers are very familiar with this. There are some viruses that are, the only way we can grow them is through a live calf. So when a researcher, a virus researcher, needs to have more virus, he's got to grow it in a calf. And so the slide here illustrates a germ-free bubble. Inside that bubble, you can't see it, but there's a newborn calf. That calf was obtained by cesarean section. It's never been exposed to any kind of pathogens. So a researcher can just take a small dose of virus, put it inside that bubble, expose that calf to that virus, and the virus, or the calf, does all the rest of the work. It multiplies that virus to large numbers so that the researcher can collect that, those fecal samples, recover the virus, and continue to work with it. So the calf serves as this growth media for the virus. On the ranch, the same thing happens. So you get this cow herd that produces low levels of virus. They're shedding that into the environment. First calves born in the calving season get that low dose, and they spread a little bit more. And they spread that to calves that are subsequently born. Those calves produce larger doses until eventually we have a contaminated calving environment. An important concept to understand is that over the course of time now, we've had higher and higher and higher numbers of the pathogen in the environment. Does that translate to what we see in ranches? Here's some data from a ranch. The blue shaded bars represent the number of calves born every week on this ranch. So we start out low, we get to some high number, and then we kind of have a long tail as we finish out the calving season. About halfway through that calving season, we start to see deaths show up from calf scours. And so those black shaded bars represent the counts of calves that have died over the course of that calving season. Now, if you look at who those calves were, so this graph is from the same data, and this is calves by when they were born in the calving season and what their probability of dying due to scours was. So you can see that the calves that were born early in the calving season had a very low probability of dying from scours. But the later a calf was born in the calving season, its probability of death due to scours increases. And so by the time that calving season is over, you can see that the last calves born had a 50% probability of dying due to calf scours. All right. I think I've outlined all of the concepts that we need to deal with. Let's take what we know and think about how we might intervene to prevent scours from occurring. All right, the first thing that we can do is we can do something in that interaction between the host and the agent. So is there a way that we can raise that bar on the immunity level? And we do things like there are calf scour vaccines that we might use. We might try to eliminate the agent from the environment so it doesn't exist in the environment at all. Dr. Mortimer was talking about that with BVD. If you could eliminate those BVD PI animals, not ever have them arrive in your herd in the first place, you'd control that infection. All right, and the third thing that we can do is try to prevent the effective contacts. Those are the contacts that are adequate enough to actually cause disease. All right, problem is that those agents exist on your farms anyways, and we don't believe there's any way to eradicate these agents from your farm. They are endemic to all ranch settings. So that strategy of trying to prevent calf scour agents from existing on your farm is not a likely strategy to be successful. As far as increasing resistance, we certainly have vaccines. If they're working for you in your ranch, you'd want to continue using them. We've had vaccines for calf scours for at least 30 years now, and we still see calf scours. So I'll argue that vaccination alone may not be adequate to prevent calf scours in all settings. So that leaves us with that third strategy, which is preventing effective contacts. All right, so when we try to prevent effective contacts, and this is the idea that we're decreasing the number of contacts, that's physical contact with the pathogen, at a level, an exposure level, a dose load that's adequate enough to cause the disease. We can do that three different ways. The first way is by physical separation, some means of physically separating the animal from the pathogen so they don't make contact. We might dilute animals over a large number of acres so that they just, if you have a sick animal in the group, they just don't ever make contact with the rest of the susceptible calves. We might do that by physically separating, you know, putting a fence line between groups of animals so that one group doesn't have physical contact with another group. In some cases, we employ quarantine. Quarantine is where you take a known infected source and you keep it physically isolated from the other susceptible animals. Second strategy we might employ is minimizing the dose load. So we're not preventing exposure entirely, but we're keeping the exposure level to a low enough level that it doesn't result in disease. We do that sometimes with medications. When we're trying to control coccidiosis, for example, we might use medications in the feed so that the shedding of those oocysts stays at a low enough level that we don't have widespread transmission. Sanitation, just keeping things clean so that we don't have a buildup of pathogens in a certain surroundings, is another example of minimizing the dose load. And finally, we can try to minimize the contact time so that that you're exposed, but just briefly enough that there's not that opportunity for that effective contact. In surgery, you know, we often say that we're worried about wound infections and introducing pathogens, and so we often say that if you can't do your surgery clean enough, you want to make sure you do it fast enough so that you're in and out and you don't give those infectious agents an opportunity to set up housekeeping. Now, in the dairy industry, they use calf hutches to prevent effective contacts. So what they're doing is they take this calf immediately away from the source of the pathogens, which is the dam as well as the other dry cows that might be in that same calving environment. So they get that calf out of there as soon as possible. They move it to a little shed, a hutch, that has been cleaned, disinfected, so we've minimized the dose load of exposure. We've employed hygiene to keep that calf hutch clean prior to the arrival of that calf. That calf goes in there and has physical segregation from all the other calves, so there's no nose-to-nose contact or opportunities for transmission. So I guess I could stand here and say that you should all raise your calves in hutches, but I think I wouldn't last very long. So we've got to think about how we can employ these same systems in beef production settings. So where are the opportunities for transmission of these pathogens? What things do we do in our production systems that favor the pathogens, favor the routes of transmission? So think about round bale feeders. There was just a study. I just read a study before I came out here, data from Kansas State, where they were looking at enteric pathogens surrounding a round bale feeder. They found it's very easy to isolate those during the calving season when cattle are being fed around these feeders. High levels of enteric pathogens around there. But when you take the cattle away and you go out 60 days or so away from the feeder, you can't recover those organisms anymore. So we've got this contamination that builds up, but it doesn't survive to the next year. All right. So let's take a look at the data that I showed you earlier. I said that we've got early on calves born early in the calving season are very unlikely to die from scours, but over the course of time through the calving season, that probability of death increases. So instead of having a single 8 or 10 week calving season, what if we could set up our situation so that instead we had 8 or 10 1 week calving intervals, so that every week of the calving season was like the first week? And that's the strategy that we employed. The way we did that was by segregating calves by age so that we prevent this multiplier effect. We don't want older calves multiplying these pathogens, exposing younger calves, which are going to further multiply the pathogens, and serially pass this pathogen over the course of time in the calving season. Further, we want to move pregnant cows into new calving pastures to minimize the dose load buildup in the environment and the contact time. So there we have it. Contact time, dose load, and physical segregation. Those are the strategies that we're going to employ to try to prevent these effective contacts. All right, so let's see how this might work in practice. We start off with a calving pasture, and we're gonna put all of our cows into that pasture, start dropping calves. So they go into that pasture when the first calf hits the ground. We're going to compromise a little bit. At least we've said we could do this for the first 2 weeks, because we're just starting to get numbers of calves. So in order to have a reasonable number of calves in that first pasture, we're going to stretch this out for 2 weeks, drop calves in that single pasture. At the end of the second week, all of the cows that have not calved, all the heavy cows, are going to get moved into another pasture. And so we begin calving in another pasture, and we leave all those pairs behind. They mothered up there in that pasture. We haven't done anything to them unless we need to tag them and identify them, so forth. But we've done nothing to disturb that bonding between the dam and the calf. They stay in that pasture. the heavy cows move on. So now we're calving in pasture 2. At the end of 1 week, we're going to move to pasture 3. Now we've got calves in the previous pasture that are all within a week of age of each other, and calves in the pasture before that that are also age segregated. So this process continues every week. We can do this. We can make these moves when you can schedule your labor. It's going to take some effort to move the heavy cows out of that pasture, but you're only doing that once a week. So you can schedule that when there's labor that's available to do that. If we have a problem, if there was a scours outbreak, this is it's an age-specific problem. So we would expect that probably we're going to see it in that group of two-week-old calves. So they're all in one place, and they don't have the opportunity to spread those pathogens to the other groups of calves. When you're looking for calving problems, you're only looking in the group of, in one pasture. That's where all of your calving is taking place. Finally, we end up calving out the rest of the calves. We're down to the smallest number of calves. They're going to finish out someplace. You've got all of these age-segregated groups. By the time a calf is 4 weeks of old, 4 weeks of age, we don't believe that it's at risk for scours anymore. So we can start to commingle those groups again. That's probably about the time for a lot of you when branding and turnout into pastures would occur. Let me take just a few minutes to describe a couple of case herds where we've done this. First herd is a herd of 800 to 900 cows, typically calving in March. What he's done in the past was pair out from a calving lot. His history of mortality due to scours was 14% in 1995. 6.5% in 96. In 99, he had 8.2% death loss, similar losses in 97 and 98. That translates to losing 55 to 120 calves every year due to scours. His treatment expenses were about $3,000 a year for each of those years from 1995 to 1999. In 2000, we initiated this Sandhills calving system strategy. He's done this now for 4 years. I've got data for the first three. The first year he had four calves that he treated for scours. He's had no deaths in the entire 4 years that he's done this, attributed to neonatal calf diarrhea. His average veterinary expenses for any reasons for having veterinary costs, $128.83 per year. That's a 24-fold reduction in the cost of drugs. This owner estimates that this change was worth $40,000 to $50,000 each year due to the greater number of weaned calves, improved calf performance, and reduced expenses for treatments. That's considering the cost of the medications as well as the labor. Another herd we did this in was a summer calving herd in intensive grass management herd with 300 to 400 cows. Their mortality in 99 was 6.5%, about 12% in 2000. Notice that these cows move through pastures rapidly every few days. So it's not just the fact that we're moving to different pastures that makes this, because they were having problems even though they were doing that. Okay, so we implemented this system in 2001 and have done it up until now. We had to make some changes because you've got these groups that are moving quickly. So what we did was we modified it a little bit. We split off groups from the rotation every 100 pairs or every 10 days. So we've got multiple groups of cattle moving through multiple pastures. Mortality was significantly reduced. Their all-cause death loss was 2.3% and 1.5%. That was a significant reduction from what we'd seen in the past. And they've had no deaths from neonatal calf scours in the 3 years now that we've followed them. So this Sandhills calving system, it's not rocket science. We're trying to prevent effective contact so that we can control calf scours by moving heavy cows into clean pastures every week. And the result of that, and probably the most important result of that, is that we segregate calves by 1 week age groups. The result is that we've improved calf health and well-being, we've improved productivity, and in some cases we've increased labor efficiency because of being able to schedule when the work was done, not having to deal with scouring calves and so forth. So I'll leave you with some more words of Linus Van Ness. Those concerned with food-producing animals must think in terms of hygiene, for their success is in no small measure dependent upon their knowledge of the subject. I don't know if we have time for a few questions or not, but I'd be glad to answer your questions now. Please contact me in my office. I'd be glad to talk with any of you about this system and how it works.